25th, 2020. I'm Steve Fodor.
I'm Chip Hassenflow.
And I'm Pam Fedor.
And look, we have gotten through to Chapter 5 of The Valley of Fear, everyone. Chapter 5. This is a turning point of some sort, isn't it? No?
The people of the drama, Steve. The people of the drama.
The people.
You know those people. They're thespians.
The drama people? Is that what you read? The drama people? What does he mean, you people? Pam, what's this chapter about?
Well, here again, we watch White Mason and Inspector Mac doing their job as country inspectors, and Holmes jumps in every once in a while, and Watson's just recording it all, right? Mm-hmm. He has very, very few lines so far in this story. So we open with White Mason talking to Sherlock. "Have you seen all you want of the study?" asked White Mason as we re-entered the house. "For the time," said the inspector, and Holmes nodded. "Then perhaps you would now like to hear the evidence of some of the people in the house. We could use the dining room, Ames. Please come yourself first and tell us what you know." And as we go through this, we meet each of the main people of the house. Ames the butler, Mrs. Allen the housekeeper, Cecil Barker, the good friend, and Mrs. Douglas herself. And so this is just really these four interviews that get gathered together in this chapter, giving us a ton of information.
Mm-hmm. And the way you present that, that sounds boring to me, but nothing about chapter five was boring. This was very interesting, very good narrative, and some great dialogue work here from Doyle.
Mm-hmm. Not quite a sprint, but it just everything kind of just moved along at a steady pace.
And once again, this is monthly. This is coming out in a magazine monthly. And chapter five really makes me ready for chapter six. I'm ready to buy this magazine.
Definitely. And you want to solve the mystery. I mean, this is a total fair play kind of story where we know that we're getting all the important information. We just don't know if we're processing it correctly, right?
And that's the fun game that I'm playing with this because, Pam, I know that you know this mystery. I know that you know this work and you are our expert. And Chip and I are playing along with Watson here. And I don't know which red herrings I'm looking at. And I don't know which rabbit holes he's going down that are the wrong ones. I'm going to be staring at your facial expression while we do this podcast.
And I think I'll turn off my video so you'll see.
So, in fact, that's the real important part, is I'm not reading ahead. I'm having the information come to me, and I'm trying to think about it as a first-time reader, because I am that first-time reader.
Right. Now, one thing I'll note, and this is something that Watson notes, is that timing is important. So, as they interview everyone, they ask how long it took between the shot, and then Cecil Barker was the first one down who rang the alarm bell. So, Ames said he didn't hear the shot, just the bell, which makes sense based on where he was in the house. Mrs. Allen, the housekeeper, is hard of hearing. Now, she heard a sound like a door slamming, but it was actually a whole half hour before the alarm bell, and she did hear the alarm bell. Cecil heard the shot, ran down to the study, found the body, and rang the bell immediately. And then Mrs. Douglas heard the shot, put on her dressing gown, and came down. She wasn't sure how much time had passed. She said, time passes so weirdly in these emergencies, but she thinks maybe 2 minutes. And then she was met by Cecil telling her, "Don't go in the study. Your husband is dead. There's nothing you can do." So we get the same questions of each of our four witnesses with somewhat responses and different explanations for those responses.
This is a good mystery. I bring to mind all of the mysteries that I've loved in the past. I think of the movie Clue, where we are going over this material over and over and over again. And this is a very interesting discovery. We talk about Douglas and his mysterious past. We've already talked a little bit about the idea that he has a brand on his arm and that there's some mementos of an era past. Cecil Barker is a big part of that past, and there's some great dialogue between Cecil and Inspector MacDonald here. Inspector MacDonald asks Cecil, "How long were you with Douglas in California?" He says, 5 years altogether. "He was a bachelor, you say? A widower?" Have you ever heard where his first wife came from? No, I remember his saying that she was of German extraction, and I have seen her portrait. She was a very beautiful woman. She died of typhoid the year before I met him. You don't associate his past with any particular part of America? He says, I've heard him talk of Chicago. Yay! I was expecting that because you made a face when I said it maybe two episodes ago.
This was even right before the Cubs won a World Series, Steve. So,
oh. Yeah. That is exactly accurate, though. That is true. Wow.
A few years later, the Cubs would win their first world championship.
I had not done that math, sir. Wow. Wow.
A few years later, the Black Sox, of course, won theirs.
Right. Oh, boy. That puts some context to this. I've heard him talk of Chicago. He knew that city well and worked there. I have heard him talk of the coal and iron districts. He had traveled a good deal in his time. McDonald asks the question, was he a politician? Had this secret society to do with politics? No, he cared nothing about politics. You have no reason to think it was criminal. No, on the contrary, I never met a straighter man in my life.
So he those districts most likely were Southside Chicago too.
Coal and steel, yes, probably. I agree.
Yeah, yeah. Interesting. So I mean, certainly there would be the area where unions would be playing a part. Certainly, poor working conditions. Thinking of that time, of what was going on, and the people who were moving to the city at the time. This is actually for Doyle. This is certainly factual-ish enough of that area. I mean, if you wanted to, plausible, that type of thing.
Factual-ish. I think that's the name of your next album.
Everything is ish, Steve.
Yes.
And then Barker has some really interesting details, right? He says that Douglas had given him the impression that some danger was hanging over his head, and he had always looked upon his sudden departure from California and also his renting a house in so quiet a place in England as being connected with this peril. He imagined that some secret society, some implacable organization was on Douglas's track, which would never rest until it killed him. Some remarks of his had given him this idea, though he had never told him what the society was or how he had come to offend it. He could only suppose that the legend upon the placard had some reference to this secret society. We find out also that right after the secret society business, when Douglas left America, some guys came looking for him. And Inspector Max says, what sort of men? To which Cecil replies, well, they were a mighty hard-looking crowd. They came up to the claim and wanted to know where he was. I told them that he was gone to Europe and that I did not know where to find him. They meant him no good. It was easy to see that. Were these men Americans, Californians? Well, I don't know about Californians. They were Americans, all right, but they were not miners. I don't know what they were and was very glad to see their backs. Then I found one more interesting piece of this interview is when Max said, but if a man had a danger hanging over him and knew what it was, don't you think he would turn to the police for protection? To which Barker says, maybe it was some danger that he could not be protected against. And I think this really, really brings up the question of who are the American police versus the British police. That's a really big part. You know, there's plenty to come in this novel, but watch out for that. We are really getting into what British policing looks like as Watson sits quietly and Holmes and Watson watch the actual official police at work. Very different modes of policing in the US and the UK at this time.
And as looking through this, I don't know if in the notes this was mentioned at this point or a little bit later, but Douglas always had a revolver with him.
Mm-hmm.
And that was mentioned, you know, that was a sentence there, and I think that's something that was very important.
Mm-hmm. How American. Cecil doesn't like some of the questions. They certainly have a relationship going on here between Mr. Douglas, Mrs. Douglas, and Cecil Barker. And he has a sore spot here where Mac asks if he knew Mrs. Douglas before the Douglases were married, to which Cecil emphatically says no.
Well, and not just emphatically says no, he says, Mac kind of pursues it, but you have seen a good deal of her since. Barker looked sternly at the detective. I have seen a good deal of him since, he answered. If I have seen her, it is because you cannot visit a man without knowing his wife. If you imagine there is any connection. I imagine nothing, Mr. Barker. I am bound to make every inquiry which can bear upon the case, but I mean no offense. Some inquiries are offensive. Barker answered angrily. Woo! Mm-hmm. Protesting a little too much?
It seems to be noted. It seems to me that Doyle is really good at giving us the background knowledge here. Like, this is a conversation that Cecil has had with people before Mac walked in and asked this question. This is a sore spot. This is an issue. Noted. There's your chip impression for the day.
Noted.
And then he does explain that Douglas was super jealous. And it actually sounds like they've had some, issues where Douglas got so jealous of Cecil's, according to him, totally above board relationship with Mrs. Douglas that he was like, I'm not going to visit you anymore. And then Douglas wrote him this long imploring message saying, I'm so sorry, please do come back. And we really value your friendship. So, interesting.
Mm-hmm. Jealousy is a big green monster, isn't it?
Getting jelly.
The Valley of Fear is finally mentioned here. There is some, there's some sort of mystery around the Valley of Fear.
The Valley of Fear.
And I love that Mrs. Douglas is the one who introduces the title. Now, did you guys enjoy the description of Mrs. Douglas? She's, of course, tall and beautiful, 20 years younger than her husband. You know, we've seen this situation before.
It seems so unusual. I've never heard of anything like this. Incredible.
An older author focusing on having a younger bride.
Middle-aged men with younger, very attractive brides.
Never heard of before.
Which brings up the SNL, the Saturday Night Live skit with Tina Fey, where it was the three contestants were to meet their future wives. And they were all kids, and it was all three of them were incredibly uncomfortable.
Oh, terrible!
It is. I'll put that in the notes for us. It's very funny.
Thanks, Chip, for sharing that. Now, Mrs. Douglas introduces the title, and this is the first time in the novel that we get the title. And so she says she always knew that Mr. Douglas was in fear for his life. And there's one phrase he let drop that chilled her. Might I ask, asked Holmes, what the words were which attracted your attention? The Valley of Fear, the lady answered. That was an expression he has used when I questioned him. I have been in the Valley of Fear. I am not out of it yet. Are we never to get out of the Valley of Fear? I have asked him when I have seen him more serious than usual. Sometimes I think we never shall, he has answered. Surely you asked him what he meant by the Valley of Fear. I did, but his face would become very grave and he would shake his head. It is bad enough that one of us should have been in its shadow, he said. Please, God, it shall never fall upon you. It was some real valley in which he had lived and in which something terrible had occurred to him. Of that I am certain, but I can tell you no more. But Sherlock Holmes is not convinced that she can tell him no more. He said, well, didn't he ever mention anyone's name? And she says, oh, sure. Once when he was delirious, he mentioned Bodymaster McGinty. And Mrs. Douglas said, I asked him when he recovered who Bodymaster McGinty was and whose body he was master of. Never of mine, thank God, he answered with a laugh. And that was all I could get from him. But there is a connection between Bodymaster McGinty and the Valley of Fear. Now, I love this. So, okay, now, all right, guys.
So when I go to the gym, I'm not the only person who calls myself Bodymaster McGinty.
That is absolutely your nickname for the rest of this show, Chip. Bodymaster McGinty is the funniest name that we have read in all of Doyle.
Right. And okay. And let me say, so you've been married to this guy for 5 years and he has some secret past and you're about to tell the detectives about it. Don't you lead with Bodymaster McGinty? I mean, that's a really good clue, right? And she's like, he didn't tell me a single other thing, just this Valley of Fear business. And then Sherlock's like, what about a name? Oh, yes, there was just that one name. So
it's a common name. It's a common name. Bodymaster.
Bodymaster.
Yeah. Chip, did you have any thoughts about the Valley of Fear?
Oh, I do have. I have. All right, so this is the rabbit hole I went through. Mm-hmm. I immediately, if everyone could open up their King James version of the Bible, we should be reading Psalms 23. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for thou art with me. So anyway, I immediately thought of the Bible because at that time, even before that time, certainly the Bible was something that was readily available. If you were, even if you were literate, it's probably the only book you had. But people knew the Bible back and forth. So this sounds very much like the Valley of Fear, the Valley of the Shadow of Death. So immediately I'm going California, and I looked up San Benito County in California. And that is sort of, I wanted to see where it was in California. That's sort of in the middle of the state of California. It is a moderate Mediterranean type climate. And then from there I said, okay, where's Death Valley compared to San Benito County? Well, you have to go south of that. It's not really near it. And Death Valley is, probably near Arizona.
I was there in June. It was lovely.
Was it?
Yes.
Okay.
So the Joshua trees were glorious. We saw the desert in Death Valley, and we were like, oh, this is lovely. And they have so many solar panels.
Well, I can imagine, because it's an area with droughts. It's very, very dry. And in fact, there are extremes there. So the peaks have snow. But when you get to the valley, there's not a lot of living, and stuff like Joshua trees and cactuses and stuff like that certainly would be the types of things that could live in that type of environment. Mm-hmm. So I think I just went through a rabbit hole. I'm not really sure if it's going to count towards our solution, but we have to jump somewhere.
I'm not looking at Pam's face right now, but this is our second Bible reference in this story, because the Bible was referenced at the beginning when they were trying to figure out the cipher.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm looking at Pam's face.
The Bible was the wrong answer back then.
Ah, so is
it
the
almanac,
wrong
my friends.
Ah.
All right. Let's go to the chapter's ending before
all right.
Anything away with my highly expressive face. So Holmes examines Cecil's slippers. He's like, hey, Cecil, love to see your slippers, buddy. And
are they called slippers or are they tobacco holders? I mean,
house
I don't
shoes.
Know.
I'm wearing my house shoes. Have been for 131 days. Thank you.
Well, where does Holmes keep his tobacco, Steve?
In a different pair of house shoes.
Oh, Persian God. Slipper. Okay. Cecil slippers, probably tobacco-free, are provided. And Holmes realizes that they, which are covered in blood, actually have been used to create the blood stain on the windowsill. Now, I'd like to read the ending, but Steve, I am going to call upon you to just read Mac's line, because we do need a really good accent here, as it is mentioned in the text.
Yeah, you're calling on the wrong person, Professor.
No. You've got this. So at the end of this chapter, they realize, Cecil Barker's slippers have made the bloody footprint. The inspector was transfigured with excitement. Feel it, Steve. You've got this. His native accent rattled like a stick upon railings.
"Man," he cried, "there's not a doubt of it. Barker had just marked the window himself. It's a good deal broader than any boot mark. I mind that you said it was a splay foot, and here's the explanation. But what's the game, Mr. Holmes? What's the game?"
"Oh, well done, Stephen. Good job." "Aye, what's the game?" my friend repeated thoughtfully. White Mason chuckled and rubbed his fat hands together in his professional satisfaction. "I said it was a snorter," he cried, "and a real snorter it is." End of chapter. Now, this is such a wonderful ending because think about it. We've got the three detectives, right? So we've got Mr. Mack, who's so excited. His accent's gone crazy, as Steve just demonstrated for us. And he's just wondering what in the world is happening. Then we have Holmes, who's very thoughtful, right? "Aye, what's the game?" is his only line. We can tell he's got an idea. I mean, he's the one who asked for the slippers, right? Mm-hmm. So he's already figured something out which would involve Cecil's slippers. And then White Mason, who remember was like, "Hey, welcome to Sussex. We're all up in the times with our crimes out here in Sussex, you Londoners. We can give you a good mystery." He's just thrilled. He's rubbing his hands together and he's calling it a snorter. So I don't know, Chip, maybe we can get you to be the White Mason because we're going to get this dynamic of the three detectives some more.
Mm, I have fat hands.
That's not what I was...
I'm going to rub them with satisfaction.
I have to be honest here. I don't get a sense of the character of White Mason. I absolutely have McDonald. I understand this character, but I've not been given enough information on White Mason. I sometimes forget he's even in the triangle of the detectives here.
Steve, you have to think of the people of the drama. You know, what's my motivation to be White Mason? And, you know, this is how I work on the craft. This is how I own it.
Okay, good. I look forward to chapter 6 where you're playing White Mason. Rubbing your hands together.
You guys, I think that part of what happens in this very, very well-paced chapter is that Watson doesn't give us that many speech tags, right? So sometimes you're not sure if it's Inspector Mack or Inspector Mason who's asking the questions. He always tells you when it's Holmes, but the other two, I think he doesn't always distinguish. And I would recall that, like, White Mason is the bigger middle-aged guy who's really excited to have these Londoners, and he has worked with Holmes before. He's excited to have him, and he wants to show him, like, we've got great mysteries here. Look at this drawbridge. Maybe you can include us in your book, Mr. Watson. Mm-hmm. Whereas Inspector Mack is the younger guy who's much more serious and who's hoping to really learn from Holmes. And so the two dynamics, the middle-aged country detective and the younger guy who might, you can imagine Mac one day moving to London. I mean, he really is trying to learn from Holmes. So just a reminder that especially it's one of those things I feel like on a reread of the story, you see the distinctions more because Watson dispenses with speech tags a lot.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I like it when authors are able to give us dialogue without the speech tags. I have read some terrible dialogue that he said, she said. Right. Like, no. You gotta let me figure out who's speaking sometimes. And Doyle's really gotten the dialogue down really well here.
And that's where you get the cadence of a conversation going.
Exactly.
Without the he said, she said, you start getting the banter back and forth. And that's where the revelations come through from.
I agree. I'm so excited to get into chapter 6. I think that we are deep into this mystery. And like I said, I would buy this magazine. If this was a month's wait, I would be anticipating chapter 6. So we don't have a month's wait. We can wait till tomorrow, and I am anticipating chapter 6 here.
And chapter 6 is called A Dawning Light. Now, this is only chapter 6 of 15, so that's interesting.
Now I'm even more intrigued for tomorrow. That's all right. That's all right, Professor.
Your rhythm with like, ooh, it's gonna be good. Forgive me.
You could drag us along. It's okay. We're following your lead. Well done. I hope everybody out there is enjoying it as much as we are. Hope you are anticipating the excitement of Chapter 6 as much as we are. We would love to hear from you. Give us an email. Give us a text. Follow our hashtag TMS Sherlock Holmes. There's been some interesting chatter on that on the social medias. And go to our dedicated Sherlock Holmes website, sandwichesatirregularhours.com, for all of these conversations that we've had over the entire canon of Sherlock Holmes. I want to thank you again for listening to Too Much Scrolling. I'm Steve Fodor.
I'm Chip Hessenflow.
And I'm Pam Bedore, welcoming you to the Valley of Fear.